Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, you're going to find out while having those elderberries, probably as a liquid, that's what I do each day, why your grandmother or mother were right. It does help you prevent a cold or the flu. University of Sydney, going to go into that and about 17 other important studies that we seek from around the world, always from peer-reviewed journals, always quality institutions, and for some reason never mentioned in the mainstream media, but we're going to share it with you. Then today, I didn't have a chance yesterday, as busy as the program was, to share a discussion. This was a discussion with multi-award-winning journalist, Laura Logan. For 16 years, she was on 60 Minutes, and she's talking about bias in the media, and I believe that we should pay attention. Now, she's being interviewed with Mark Levin. Now, you can like or dislike Mark and part or whole. That's your business. That's irrelevant. What she's saying is highly relevant because she was leading off Ted Koppel's comments about media bias. So we're going to take that thread and go it forward. In fact, some people in this audience, Glenn Friendly, David Weinberg, sent me a piece, I believe it's from Estella Montebello Abido, on how to escape the age of the mass delusion. And I have my own commentary on that, plus I'll share theirs. Also today, time permitting, a commentary from Chris Hedges from Truth Dig on our ever-deadlier police state. And I spoke with John Whitehead, constitutional lawyer, along with Danny Sheehan, constitutional lawyer, two of the best in America. And we all agree, and I'm sure many of you would agree, that we have not been paying enough attention to how individuals have taken away our liberties and rights. And just one example is the vaccine mess. Yesterday I played you segments about how a professor at Baylor College in pediatrics was on a panel. The panel was brought together, including Paul Offit, to tell people how you can get the anti-vax people back on board to vaccinate. And they talked about infiltrating our schools with curriculum, which they had the power to do and will, how they're going to get doctors trained on how to debate their talking points. Now you're going to hear the same talking points, just like you do in the mainstream media, all over the place when it comes to vaccines. And also one woman, the Baylor professor, said, we just have to get rid of whites. Now, could you imagine if that was said on any other media or publicly? What would happen to a person who said, we just have to get rid of whites? And she's a white woman. Boy, it shows you how far down the rabbit hole we've gone in our ethics, our understanding of disease, and our capacity to share better insights on how to treat it. Also today, I'm going to spend more time on environmental issues. Oh, by the way, I want to thank the thousands of people who downloaded the program on the two-hour special on the environment on Earth Day. And hopefully you also are going to prn.fm and downloading the 9 articles. Now, these are not short articles. They are very comprehensive, very detailed. They're based upon over 10 years of research with Richard Gale and myself telling you, here's the tipping points, here's what's tipping, here's what we could still do something about. So there's a negative picture and a positive picture when it comes to the environment. And these articles explain all of this and what you can do. So that's our program today. Let's get started. First up, every morning I take about 2 tablespoons of elderberry concentrate, organic concentrate, because I have known the scientific literature. For those of you who have not yet read it, from the University of Sydney comes this subject. Now, historically, it would be relegated to folk medicine or herbal philosophy. It's been used for millennia to combat a whole range of ailments, and at times to the chagrin of modern scientists who have struggled to explain their medicinal benefits. However, a recent study by researchers at the University of Sydney has determined exactly how a popular ancient remedy, the elderberry fruit, can help fight against influenza. So this is what I do. I'm not going to get a flu shot, but I will certainly do this along with vitamin D and other natural things. A professor at the university, in fact, several professors, worked on an ARC training center, and they came up with the understanding that the elderberry can directly inhibit the virus's entry and replication in human cells, and it can help strengthen a person's immune response to the virus. Now, it is a definite flu-fighting remedy, and there are comprehensive studies on the phytochemicals, those are the compounds that positively affect health from elderberries to combat viruses in the body. So the question is, if it helps combat the flu virus, viruses, would it also help with other viruses? So I'm assuming it does, and I'd like to have feedback from people in the audience who have not taken elderberry and start taking it, and then after, let's say, 4 to 8 weeks, let me know what has been the response. And in any case, it's just the elderberry juice is one of our top 10 juices for fighting viral infections. And I recommend it to the people I counsel who have Epstein-Barr virus, chronic fatigue syndrome, Lyme's disease, herpes 6, 1 and 2. It makes a difference. Now, there is a chemical in a lot of green vegetables, specifically cruciferous vegetables, such as broccoli and cauliflower, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, kale, and also radishes. And it's called sulforaphane, S-U-L-F-O-R-A-P-H-A-N-E. And the new study from Johns Hopkins University shows that it can, this natural compound from these vegetables, can in large amounts improve the symptoms associated with autism in children. Autism is at an epidemic level, and boys is now down in 1 in 32. I spoke with a MIT professor who said that within the next 5 years it could go down to 1 in 3 boys. And yet, instead of calling it an epidemic due to environmental factors, including and substantially due to vaccines, they think, well, it must be something else. No, it's not. We know what it is. But in any case, if your child suffers from autism, understand that having them eat more of the vegetables, the cruciferous vegetables, can make a difference. And by the way, you can also juice some cruciferous vegetables. I wouldn't recommend it if you have an underactive thyroid, but children generally have a very good thyroid. They have boundless energy. But get those nutrients in. And this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, our number one most respected scientific body in the United States. So something good, something natural, something new that we didn't know. Sulforaphane, one of the active ingredients in cruciferous vegetables. We know that it's good for viruses. We know that it's good for building your immune system. And quercetin also, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, that supports healthy cellular function. So quite simply, these plant-based compounds like sulforaphane, like broccoli, for example, or cauliflower, taken with quercetin, gives you much better cellular function, and that's important. Also, they found that the omega-3 fatty acids and vitamin A together can reduce negative health impacts of stress. This is from the University of Firenze in Italy and the University of Rio Grande do Sul in Brazil. And this was published again in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So what they say is this, that there's actually an Irish group, Brazilian and Italian. They found that giving, in this laboratory experiment, the rats exposed to high stress, extra doses of the omega-3 fatty acids resulted in a reduction in the kind of mental and physical damage that normally occur under such circumstances. So, for everyone in the audience, if you find that you're under stress, make sure you increase the amount of your omega-3 fatty acids. This was a topic I discussed in an article a long time ago in the Journal of Psychotronic Research. In fact, I had a conversation yesterday with a physician, a highly respected board-certified cardiologist, who himself, and I will not name him and you wouldn't be able to guess, came to me because he has advanced multiple sclerosis and there's nothing that can be done, and diabetes, etc. And during our discussion about a protocol, he mentioned that he looked up one of the things I had done research on a long time ago, and he said, I was surprised to find out that that's what caused the whole field of therapeutic touch, which is a accredited, completely accepted course in every medical school in North America. Yeah, and I said, yes, there was a Dr. Dolores Krieger, who at that time was the head of nursing, chairman of the department at New York University Medical School, or New York University Nursing School. And because of the study she was in, and the results of that study, over a two-year period, there was then the establishment of a scientific basis for energy exchange. And then I went on to discuss for an hour the other people, Dr. Thomas Kruth and Dr. Roger Carger and Dr. Morton Jacobs and Rabbi Abraham Wiseman and Olga Worrell, all the people who were in this study. And 6 out of 6 times they were able to reverse terminal cancer in these rats. And then they went on to do other things as well that were remarkable that science had no explanation for, and that was the key. In the existing paradigm, there was no explanation in a Newtonian, reductionistic, completely linear left-brain way of looking at a problem. There's a time in life where you have to simply understand that there is no way you're ever going to figure something out if you keep coming at it from the wrong or limited perspective. We have to open our mind. And to open our mind, we have to change our perception. If we change our perception of what is real and what is not real, then we also change our reality because we're allowing a greater sense of what is real, not real to our body politics or our religion or our culture or our ethnicity, but what is real in a unfathomably complex universe. And so we had this existential comment. And then out of the clear blue, he says, you know, something happened to me, and that's why I practice medicine the way I do. I said, what's that? He said, I once had a spontaneous, not a psychedelic, but an unusual process as if I had touched an ultimate reality. I said, do you mean what is considered the God reality? And he said, yes, yeah, that's it. And he said, I've never understood what happened. And I said, well, I said, have you spoken with a shaman? Have you spoken with the Native American elders, the women who have this experience all the time? They carry it with them. He said, no. I said, then you should go at this point in your life, since you're in the last journey of your life, do something different, break the habits, you know, give yourself time to see the remarkable uniqueness of being of so many people and cultures. Go down to the Amazon. I've been in the Amazon. You're going to see and experience things there. I'm not talking about a tourist trip. I'm talking about get into the wilds. But also just go down to Jamaica. Jamaica has the native doctors, and they have remarkable skills. In any case, I was thinking about this. And lo and behold, John Hopkins School of Medicine did a study. And, well, let me put this in proper perspective so we understand it. Let's pull back a little bit. I'll bet most of you at some point in your life have had this unique, what is called the ultimate reality, where you think something, you feel something, you maybe even see something, you hear something that has no logical or linear explanation. It just doesn't make sense. You're thinking about someone you haven't seen in 10 years. Suddenly the phone rings, they're there. You know, you vision something that you could not have known and then find out that it happened. or there's just this blissful moment where you feel touched to your soul, something that goes beyond the tactile stimulation. Well, people over the millennia have reported having deeply moving religious experiences, either spontaneously or while under the influence of let's say, chants or repetitive prayers like the Buddhists. Buddhism is not a religion, it's a philosophy. Or even in the Amazon, they'll drink a brew, and a portion of those experiences have been encounters with what the person regards as a God or ultimate reality. So they took a survey of thousands of people reported having experienced personal encounters like this. These are the people John Hopkins did the research. And they report that more than two-thirds of self-identified atheists shed that label after their encounter, regardless of whether it was spontaneous or while even taking magic mushrooms or psychedelic. Moreover, the researchers say a majority of the respondents attributed lasting positive changes in their psychological health. Two-thirds of the people who experienced this said life satisfaction, purpose, meaning, even decades after their initial experience. And they just published the results in PLOS One. And what does it mean for us today, listening to this radio program? It means that at some point, shouldn't we stop the daily ritualization of just going through the motions that, okay, I get up at this hour, I go do this, and structure a day based upon these rituals, and feel that as long as we're doing these, that we're a responsible person? Shouldn't we also allow that we should also be open and seeking deeper, meaningful experiences? That's where healing occurs. That's where the energy exchange occurs. And I reminded him that the people who came in with negative attitudes, the mice did not get better. They actually got worse. In fact, there was one woman who came in, and I was not there. I was on a lecture tour, and I came back. And normally there would be two people who sit side by side with the person doing the healing just to make sure that everything is legitimate. And everybody was out sick. I mean, everybody. I thought it was the flu, but no, they didn't have the flu. And so when I spoke with someone, because I had to take their place because it was starting Monday and we had the people coming back in, they said, no, these people have excruciating migraines. And so, okay, well, maybe something that we're not aware of that they've contracted. So anyhow, the woman comes in, and because I'm a sensitive, I felt something. And then when I handed her the little enclosure with the mouse, it really came on. And so after about 3 minutes, I said, hold on a second, because she was just silent. I said, let's stop for a moment. I need to talk with you. What about? What are you feeling right now? She said, well, I'm feeling sad. About what? Well, this poor animal, look at it, has cancer. So you're trying to help the animal? Yeah, I'm trying to help the animal. Are you trying to help the animal die so it doesn't suffer? Because every one of the animals that you've touched has died. So someone thought it might be a bacteria infection or something. They keep replacing animals. And then this person kind of broke into this whole discussion about how she can't maintain a relationship, she's hypercritical of everything and everyone, that she seems to be looking for the negative in anything and anyone. If she goes, you know, to a dance, she's saying the music is too loud and the people are obnoxious. If she goes to a movie, it was boring. If she reads a book, it wasn't interesting. And this is what she's telling me. And I said, you realize that you have mastered the art of taking in negative energy and sharing it also, because the universe never gives you half measure. So whatever can create a positive effect by using energy can equally create a negative effect. Just reverse the energy, reverse this polarity. You can be happy or sad, positive or negative, kind or unkind, selfish or selfless. And you can do that in a heartbeat by shifting the energy. And she realized that so many of the people that hang around her get sick. never assuming for a moment that there was any association with her. And that was it. I mean, understand that the energy someone brings into your life, no matter what is being said, may represent unresolved issues in their own life. And where they're not satisfied, they don't seem to have a purpose, there's a dull meaning to their life, it's kind of in a haze. And whereas on the other side of that, we can see people who materially have very little, and yet they're very happy people because they have experienced something that has a deeper, meaningful connection to them. Just want to share that because yesterday I spent probably 2.5 hours with this physician, and after I did, he said, "My God, I now understand so much that I didn't understand." I guess he's 76 years old, still practicing every year, every day. Hasn't given himself a day off to relax and enjoy his own, his own life. Finally, from the Medical Association of Lombard and in Italy, acupuncture equals disease prevention. Ah, well recognized for its therapeutic effects, acupuncture is increasingly being appreciated for its ability to promote wellness and contribute to the prevention of a broad range of conditions. A new study which demonstrates the promise of acupuncture as a complementary approach to improving psychological and pain symptoms associated with post-traumatic stress disorder following a natural disaster is published in the issue of a special issue on acupuncture to foster health promotion. And that's a major peer-reviewed journal. So how about that? So one more thing that acupuncture does out of the thousands of studies published on it. So if you have experienced post-traumatic stress disorder, if you're a Vietnam vet, if you've gone through a bad and tumultuous and abusive relationship, if you were abused growing up as a kid, acupuncture can now help that. Oh, and by the way, one last thing. Wake Forest Medical Center published an article in the Obesity Journal showing that a Mediterranean diet prevents you from overeating. That's good. And if you understand that they eat slowly, they eat a primarily plant-based diet, that's one of the reasons. And women, Johns Hopkins University is saying their latest research that 19 million women in the United States have established cardiovascular disease. 19 million. And they're not exercising. And that makes them more susceptible to coronary artery disease, stroke, heart failure, heart rhythm disturbances, peripheral artery disease. So we got to get people exercising. And the American Heart Association says that it's the number one killer. 43 million women are affected with this, and this is published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So let's start exercising. That's one good way to help save a life. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment with your questions. And by the way, just so you have, we have new people coming in every day. We have several lines that you can call in on. One is to listen live. So let's say you're traveling, you're sitting in an airport, you're in a car, you put it on the speaker, and you dial a number, and that way you can hear this. And there's an app, PRN.FM, on your cell phone. But here's the number you can call in and listen live to this show. 641-793-7091. 641-793-7091. But let's say you just can't, but you want to hear a program, like you want to hear the 2-hour special on the environment I did on Earth Day. Call the archives. 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. But to leave a message you'd like me to address, this is our voicemail line, 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. Back in a moment.
message is for Gary Knoll. I'm calling to ask a question about the current movements going on regarding climate change, like Extinction Rebellion, Youth for Climate Strike, and the Sunrise Movement. I wanted to know, do you think these movements are just the beginning of a continuous movement to sort of protect the planet from further destruction? Do you think that the governments are going to listen to these people that are out here trying to disrupt, disrupt the flow of just not of inaction? I'll take your answer over the radio. Bye bye.
I'm going to give you two answers to your single question, and both of my answers, I believe, deserve to be listened to. I fully support, as should everyone in this audience, anyone who goes out there to protest the environment. What has happened to it is destruction, and what we can do about it, individually or collectively. And right now, there's a person out there, a young person, and her name is Greta Thunberg, Thunberg. She's 16 years of age, and she met with Parliament yesterday, and she read a riot act. She did not hold back. She writes all of her own material. She's highly literate, and I support her. She was able to get 1.2 million young people to get out of high school and on a Friday, and they went on strike until the adults paid attention and did something. In the United States, where that message was also broadcast over social media, I took my camera crew and we went to the United Nations just 3 weeks ago. And outside the United Nations, withholding a sign showing that she was a 12-year-old, and she was there with her mother, and she was there in solidarity with those who were protesting in Europe. There were two other people with her. 1.2 million in Europe, three people in the United States, and young people in the United States in New York City. So, yes, all of these campaigns deserve our attention and our support. Will it make a difference? Absolutely, positively not. There is nothing that any human being in the world will do today that is going to change the outcome of the environment. That is not nihilistic, that is not fatalistic, that is not apocalyptic, it is simply pragmatic. Why? Because we haven't done anything up to this point except doing euphemisms and show up at the Paris talks or act as if somehow we're concerned. We have thousands of non-governmental organizations, NGOs and foundations involved in collecting money to face environmental issues and offer some constructive input. Almost the majority of them, I would say, have been co-opted by money. And who gives money? The polluters. So the absurdity of a carbon tax, hey, I'm polluting like the Dickens, and my pollution alone in China is enough to cause us to go forward over that 1.5. We're actually past 1.5 right now, on our way to 2, which means everything in the world will change for the worse. But we're going to pay an amount of money to some government and as a carbon offset tax. It's stupid. Also, industries have yet to come forward and say we're willing to change the steel industry, the auto industry, the refrigeration, and all the industries that create a product, even if it's a good product and a necessary product, but they're polluting in the process. No industry wants to be the one that says, look, we're willing to do it. However, our stockholders are generally just greedy people. They want a return. Wall Street is pure greed. They demand a return. So if we hold aside profits to put into renewable energy or to clean up our own industrial mess, then we're going to lose the stock, the value in the stock. People will withdraw, put it in other places. That's true. So the only change you have are in existing new energies that are coming up, like turning coal mines that have closed down and power plants in West Virginia into solar houses or hydroponic houses. That's a good thing. But it's not enough. Then you have the full capture of virtually every single governmental agency in the United States and Canada. That goofball up there who's prime minister, my God, he's just a more sanitized version of Donald Trump. He's completely complicit. They give enormous subsidies to their polluting industries, the coal tar sands industries. And every time they tell us how bad it is, we find out it's three or four, five times worse than what it is. That was just reported this morning on how polluting the coal tar sands are. So your governmental agencies are EPA, our FDA, USDA, the Department of Energy. All of those have been captured because technocrats, let me just explain how this works. This might be a good time for this. I was on our sister station, PFW, in Washington for 36 years. And at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 days a week, many of you listening right now over PRN used to listen every day. And you knew I would come down about every 3 months and help do a free lecture, a free premiere, and it would raise sometimes as much as $75,000 for the station, and I was happy to do that. And I remember the good people there, Tiffany Jordan and Lou Hankins, all the people that on a small station made it work. Without fail, I would meet people who worked within the governmental agencies who would come to the lectures, who were interested in health and what we discussed. And they would tell me the horror stories of how corrupt virtually every agency is in Washington. And here's what you're not aware of unless you're in Washington. That first you have the dominant figures, the people behind the scenes who have a particular understanding of life and what they believe is right and wrong. And they're very black and white. They're absolutists. They're ultra-Orthodox. So they're the oligarchs. They have the money. They give the money to foundations and think tanks. You'll see the representatives on the Council on Foreign Relations and the Business Roundtable and the Bilderberg Group and the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute. They try to bring in some very bright individuals, well-educated from very prestigious institutions who have a good background. These are the technocrats. They then select the people that they want on their team, and these people have to be loyalists. You're well rewarded if you're loyal. So, you can become the head of the CIA. You can become the head of the National Security Agency. You can become the head of the, like Rick Perry, who knows nothing about energy, becomes the head of the Energy Department and then secretly wants to give our nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia. So you have, at any given administration for a four-year period, you could place anywhere between 2,000, more or less, on the low side to 6,000 on the high side of these technocrats. Now, the technocrats go into bureaucracies that are permanent, like the Internal Revenue Service, the CIA, the Justice Department, the State Department. And the people working there are bureaucrats. Unfortunately, the bureaucrats are limited in the power that they have. There were 14,000 whistleblower complaints in the Pentagon. Not a single one was acted on. So people wake up one day, and for telling the truth about bad deeds or mismanagement, you now are the subject of prosecution. So then the deep state, and really the deep state is not a mystery, it's the people who are the oligarchs. That's the deep state, and they're the ones who ultimately make the policy. Then they have all these lieutenants who go in, the consiglieres, who go in, and they run the agencies. These are the technocrats, overseeing several million people who are the bureaucrats. Now, everything they start that's temporary becomes permanent. Everything that was meant to be small becomes ever larger. And the power that should have been limited becomes excessive to the extreme. As a result, then if you want to run for an office, you have to either be a Democrat or Republican. Why? Because both are captured by the same agencies and by the same people. They may like a person. Look, does it tell you something when every single agency supported Hillary Clinton, every bank, Wall Street? Why would Wall Street want to support a president who could end up reestablishing the Glass-Steagall Act or put a tax on algorithm trading or stop the altogether, make an executive orders to challenge the trading in derivatives? But They knew they could count upon the Clintons. Why do you think they were giving the Clintons, Bill and Hillary, hundreds of thousands of dollars for meaningless lectures? And by the way, if you doubt me, go to any lecture of a famous person. I don't care who the famous person is. And it's the most god-awful, boring, stupid, mundane lecture, and nobody minds, because that's the quid pro quo payback. Give us what we want, and after you get out of office, you'll have all the money and prestige in the world, and never be held accountable for your crimes against humanity. Now then, to make sure that none of this is exposed, they then control the media. MSNBC is fully controlled. There may be a few people there who hold some independence, but by and large, it's fully controlled, as is CNN, as is Fox. So where are you supposed to, in this New York Times, I won't even mention it's been so compromised in its integrity. Does that mean that they're going to lie about the box store of the Yankees? No. No insignificant things they can be honest about. On political, social, environmental issues, not so much. So then ask yourself, if the people who would be necessary to move a Marshall Plan on the environment are not willing to do so, if the individuals overseeing the media are not willing to make it a headline story every day and show you the consequences now, and they're not, and if personal choices are to eat meat instead of plant-based diet, and it is, 97% of Americans are unhealthy and eat unhealthy and don't exercise enough. And if we engage in universal hubris, where we preoccupy ourselves every day with our own issues instead of looking at other issues, then exactly who's supposed to do this? Do you think that a young, brilliant young lady is going to lead the world in an evolutionary turnaround? No. She will establish her own credibility. And 20 years from now, if she's still able to find forums to lecture on, she will be unchallenged and unadulterated by special interest groups. She has that character and spiritual value that is not going to be polluted. Ralph Nader has the same thing. Chris Hedges has the same thing. You know, Nellie Beatty, Glenn Ford, and Bruce Dixon of Black Agenda Report have the same thing. And by having this integrity, you're excluded from everything. You end up on Wikipedia being vilified by morons, and people spend their afternoons figuring out how they can keep you from changing all the lies and distortions on your, you know, on your bio. That's what happens. So there is no opportunity, nor possibility, nor probability that anything of meaningfulness will change anything in our lifestyles, because we have 71 to 80 million professionals in the United States, add in their family, that are following the lead of the working adult or adults, spoiled children, entitled children. And what you have is you have a prescription for disaster. I wish it were otherwise. Now, it is what it is, and it's not going to change. But on the other hand, you do have a small group of people. Let's just be optimistic and say 5 to 7%. That's still somewhere between 17 and 20 million people who are very connected to reality. Many of them are listening right now to this program throughout the world. And you are making changes personally, because you're not just willing to be judged by what you say, but by what you do. And that is the difference. You and I will vote for a candidate that we know will lose, but we're voting on principle. We refuse to vote for the lesser of two evils. But remember, all of Washington is evil. And I don't say that in a religious context. I say that in a Nietzsche existential context, that they're incapable of making the right decision about anything at any time, because they're utterly and completely corrupt. And they are able to stay corrupt because there is never a consequence to anything they do wrong. So all this other stuff about Trump and doing this and we're going to have to impeach him, you see, this is just a sideshow, because now they don't have to do any of the 100 things they should have done, like universal health care or stopping Citizens United or becoming environmentally conscious. So as long as they can fight it out between each other, then it's like watching two scorpions fighting in a cocktail glass where they both have immunity to each other's stings. It can go on forever. It's just a sideshow. So America is nothing today but a sideshow. I took a little longer than I expected on that, about 15 minutes. Right now, I want you to hear, and all I was just told that Luann Panessi's on the line, and I might, let's go over to her before I go to Laura Lohan. Logan, I want to hear that and have you hear it. But this is the last opportunity for those of you who would like to help support WBAI, our sister station where I've been for 43 years, in raising funds to pay its premiums. And we're doing a retreat. It starts, the first week starts this week, and that's full. And then Luann let me know that there's one place because a person who was coming cannot because of a wedding. They have to attend, so we have a place for one or two people the following week, and it's going to be a fun, wonderful, joyful. And I promise you this, you're going to hear conversation that you have never heard before in depths that you have not heard. It's for people that are willing to swim in some deep water. It's a whole lot different than what people expect by the time they leave, and we're expecting some remarkable outcomes at this retreat. Great food, vegan food, classes. Four different really respected artists are coming to give us classes throughout the day on liberating the artists within us. And the bucolic fields, the rose gardens, thousands of roses, the butterflies in the Monarch House where we procreate butterflies. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Yes, I have one spot that just opened up. So if anyone's interested, I do interview everyone, so do give me a call. I'm at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Give me a call, and let's fill up that last spot.
Also, what's nice is we've had at least 10 people who had such remarkable turnarounds in their health that they called Luann asking, could they come back and be on staff to inspire and motivate people based upon what they did for themselves, and they want to see other people be able to do the same for themselves. And that was remarkable when Luann says, well, we have the woman who reversed her, you know, end-stage breast cancer, and we have the MS, and we have, fine, invite him, the person with Alzheimer's who's alive, well, and taking care of his wife now. So that's going to be fun because I intend to have them do some afternoon lectures about how you face crisis in life and how you can turn that crisis from a negative ending into a positive beginning. Give your number one more time, Luann.
Surely. It's 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. Give me a call.
Good. And by the way, when I was just on, I just saw here that Karen Burns, a nurse who overcame a really serious mercury toxic reaction working in the dentist's office for years, is rebounding her health. She attended the last retreat. She said, quote, I just tuned in and heard you talk about elderberry juice while I'm steaming asparagus. I look forward to coming back to the retreat. I'm stronger than ever. Karen Burns. Good for you, Karen. We look forward to seeing you. Thank you, Luann. Now,
okay.
Let's see what we can learn. Again, let's listen to what Laura Logan has to say based on what Ted Koppel said on, she's being interviewed by Mark Levine, which you can accept or reject. That's irrelevant to me. It's what she's saying that's important.
Just something that Ted Koppel recently said. See if you agree with it or want to add to it or subtract from it. He said the other day, I'm terribly concerned that when you talk about the New York Times these days, when you talk about the Washington Post, we're not talking about the New York Times of 50 years ago. We're not talking about the Washington Post of 50 years ago. We're talking about organizations that I believe have, in fact, decided as organizations that Donald Trump is bad for the United States, that we have things appearing on the front page of the New York Times right now that never would have appeared 50 years ago. Analysis and commentary on the front page. He also said this perception that the establishment press is out to get him, meaning the president, doesn't mean that great journalism does nothing. But the notion that most of us look upon Donald Trump as being an absolute fiasco, he's not mistaken in that perception. And he's not mistaken when so many of the liberal media, for example, describe themselves as belonging to the resistance. What does that mean? What does that mean? Have you experienced this too?
I have. And I have to say that I was cheering when I heard it reported on what Ted Koppel had said, because I thought, wow, finally someone else is standing up and I'm not alone anymore. Because when it's just me, I'm easy to crush, right? But when it's myself and it's Ted Koppel, and there was a former managing editor of the New York Times who came out and said the same thing, they've become the paper of record against Donald Trump. And so what you're seeing is a growing number of figures, and this restores my faith in journalism, because I know these people are there. I know I'm not a Lone Ranger. I know I'm not the only one who remembers what great independent journalism is supposed to look like. I know I'm not the only journalist who's watching in horror as opinion and pejorative language is passed off as fact, where anonymous sources are given complete cover to do political assassinations without any regard for the consequences of what they're doing, where journalists are walking hand in hand with propaganda groups and pushing forward narratives that are not based in fact, that are not based in honest journalism, that are nothing more, you know, than political targeting, thinly disguised as journalism today. And you know the best part about all of this, Mark? There's one set of people who are not fooled by any of it. They lack the context very often. They lack a lot of the information to know exactly the extent of how they're being deceived and manipulated. But they know in their guts. And that's the audience, that's the viewers, that's the readers, that's all the people, the length and breadth of this country, in whether they're Democrats or Republicans, who are lining up to have this conversation right now, who know that something is not right. And that's why they're turning away from the news. And that's why they're not watching. And that's why they're frustrated. And that's why there's so little trust and faith in the media these days. And responsibility and accountability begins with us.
Why do you think this is the case? Why do you think one ideology, really one party, is so ubiquitous in newsrooms, whether it's newspapers, whether it's cable TV, whether it's network TV, whatever it is? Is it that this is taught in journalism school, or it's become more of a sort of a social circle, or they hire one another? What? How do you explain this?
Well, in my experience, there are several parts to this. It's no secret that the vast majority of academic institutions in this country are liberal, right? And for me, I want to be very clear here. I'm an independent thinker, okay? Nobody owns me. I'm not owned by the left, and I'm not owned by the right. Nobody owns me. I want to be very clear about that, because I've been falsely labeled as being politically motivated in any direction, and none of that is true. So what bothers me is that one political ideology dominates all of your academic, almost all of your academic institutions. And that same political ideology dominates all of your newsrooms, almost all of your newsrooms. I mean, let's face it, until Fox News, in television, where did you go if you weren't liberally minded or moderate, if you like? If you wanted to hear an alternative point of view or a conservative point of view, where did you go in television? You didn't go, there was nowhere to go. So Fox News to me is so successful because there are so many Americans saying, hey, I want a different point of view. I want to hear something else. And most people will look at a little, you know, sample of all different kinds of media, especially
today.
Is this
why Fox News is under attack by CNN and MSNBC, and the New York Times does this big story, and the Yorker magazine does a big story, and then all of a sudden their hosts are under attack, and they're being boycotted, and their advertisers are being boycotted, because they cannot tolerate even one platform that doesn't do the dance?
Yes, because when they're all singing from the same hymn sheet, all their butts are covered, aren't they? Nobody's challenging them. Nobody's holding them to account for what they're reporting. We all go sailing along thinking we're doing such amazing, outstanding work. There was an incredible reporter who said this once, Gary Webb, if anyone's seen the movie To Kill the Messenger. He was the guy who broke the story about the CIA's involvement in crack cocaine on the streets of America and their involvement in funding rebels, right? and using drug money to do so. Well, Gary Webb won the Pulitzer, and then he was destroyed. This man killed himself by the way, shooting himself twice in the head, which is quite an achievement. And he said, I was going, you know, to journalism colleges, and I was giving speeches, and I was getting awards, and, you know, I was being lauded and recognized by my whole profession. And then I realized what it was really about. It wasn't because I was so great and because my work was so good. It was because I'd never written anything important enough to suppress. And that ended with Gary Webb having no career, no family. He lost everything, and then he lost his life. So when you stay inside the bubble and inside the narrative, right, that dominates the media industry, it's a safe place to be because nobody's coming after you. These propaganda groups, and one in particular, Media Matters for America, they're targeting Fox News hosts like Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham morning to night. They have an army of people who are paid to do this. That's their job. Every day when they wake up, they're looking for a way to destroy these people.
But they feed the other media outlets, and they're more than happy to use the opposition research, believe it or not, on these hosts.
Well, think about it. If you have a profession that is dominated by one political ideology, when you have propagandists who are feeding that ideology, they agree with each other. So they have fertile ground for those ideas to take root. Not all journalists, just because you're liberal doesn't mean that you can't be a great journalist. Just because you vote Democrat doesn't mean you can't be a great journalist. Fortunately for all of us, there are principles of great journalism that exist outside of the politics. But what all of us have is we're human. And so we have things, we're all predisposed to believe people we agree with and like, more so than we do the people that we think, you know, we don't agree with. And so you have fertile ground for this propaganda to take root. Then on top of that, you have a lot of laziness. You have a lot of armchair reporters who are just happy to pick up a phone and to report whatever a source tells them because it's the White House or it's the FBI or it's someone where their butts are covered, right? No one's ever going to hold them to account if they report nonsense because they've got an official source for it. But now what's happened, what's changed, because that was always there, right? What's changed today is that you now have a press corps that's working hand in hand with propaganda organizations with a political agenda. And so what Ted Koppel was saying, people are part of the resistance. That's exactly what I was talking about when I said too many journalists today are political operatives now. They've forgotten how to be journalists. They've forgotten what we're supposed to be as journalists. And they've become political operatives. And that they have a predetermined outcome for all of their reporting. They want the removal of this president. They don't think he should ever have been elected. They don't like anything about him. You know what it's called? Resisting the normalization of Donald Trump. It's a Media Matters mission statement. It's Media Matters for America put this out to their donors and their funders and their supporters that they will resist the normalization of Donald Trump. And that means...
Okay. That was Laura Logan talking with Mark Levin. And set aside the issue of Donald Trump, as I've shared with you many times, someone that I know close to my family worked for Trump for decades. There's nothing about Donald Trump that I like. I won't reveal what I know because it would be breaking confidences. But I've let this audience know my feelings about Trump and that I felt that it would be best not to be making everything 24/7 about Trump, but rather working on the problems we have in our society that will help everyone at every level. What are those issues that we're not dealing with? Closing down our military bases around the world, making the American military stop being the number one polluter in the world, stop Citizens United, have universal health care, and de-ghettoize America, forgive student debt, the things that we could do, clean up our environment, and re-support public education as it once was and should be. Those are just a few of the 50 platforms that we have from a progressive point of view. None of that has been done, not a single thing. And I said, if you just let Trump alone, he will destroy himself. He is such a sociopath that he will absolutely destroy himself. Wasn't good enough. As a result, the deep state showed its head, and the very biased media showed its hand. So on the one hand, we can thank Donald Trump for being so radical and such a character that he caused a reaction of people who knew they could not control him. Yet they could control Hillary and Bill and Obama and Bush Sr. and Bush Jr. and Ford and Reagan and Nixon. They couldn't control Eisenhower, but they could control Truman. So you see, that's where we're at today. And our media has shown that it's been politicized. It's been weaponized. The media are supposed to report on issues, and it took nearly four years before any of the major media reported on what was happening in the Middle East, in Yemen, because all that time they spent on Trump instead of on more important issues. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.